Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that. But don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Ayo! Welcome to Cinematics, episode 126. I am Anderson. I blather about films here and there. That's Greg Srozovosti. He's a Broadcast Film Critics Association member, a BFCA member. And today we're talking about the first 2 weeks of October 2020. Gregor, how are you?
Good. How you been?
I've been fantastic.
Doing good?
Yeah. I'm doing phenomenal. It's great having 105 degree smoky weather with everything being closed and a three-year-old at home out of school. It's awesome. It's fantastic.
And it is nice. It's nice to have homes, apartments in danger anytime soon. Things could be burning up here. We just don't know what's going to happen.
The lack of options is something that a modern person should not feel the way that we're feeling. I feel probably similar to the way that early man felt when he was hiding from other tribesmen or something, and he had to stay in a cave and he wasn't allowed to go outside. that's kind of how it feels. However, I have a lot of fun every single day, even though things are... I think it's actually kind of perfect timing. I'm very, very fortunate that he is only 3 years old and he is a handful and he keeps me busy and we have a lot of fun throughout the day, no matter where we are. So I'm actually lucky. I like to complain, but I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Yeah.
You got the same kind of deal over there with Claire, right?
I got the same deal, you know, but everything's, you know, it's one of those things when I think I heard you on I've Got a Movie to Make. I asked you if you actually mentioning me on the mini pod that you do every week. And I felt guilt after I said it.
You're like, you're so busy. You're busy. And how much do you work during the day? I'm like, if I'm awake, I'm working. And then every moment that I wasn't working for the rest of the day, I'm like, all right, I kind of laid it on thick there for Greg. And I self-flogged. If you'll accept
it. Unfortunately, Anderson, you did not lay it on thick because I think you were actually correct. Because don't you think even watching movies is almost a job?
Yeah, I know, but...
You were talking about watching...
I read about the penguins for 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. I want to call taking a shower work, really.
Come on.
And I do lay in bed with the wife on nights that I'm not working, probably three, four nights a week. I actually lay in bed with the wife. And tonight we're going to watch the presidential debate. So that won't be working.
Okay. When's the last time, an hour and a half of
quiet time with the wife. I try to three or four times a week.
When's the last time, Anderson, to make you feel depressed? When's the last time you sat at a bar, had a couple of beers by yourself or just to hang out and listen to your own thoughts?
March.
When's the last time?
March.
Okay. Well, that's good. I haven't done that in years. So
that's not true.
Maybe I guess I no.
You
I
and I got together at the ArcLight not too long ago, and you drank some red wine, which I frowned upon because we were about to go see a movie, and I don't drink before watching movies. But yeah, that was Anderson, I guess that was a couple of years ago. You're right.
Thanks for flagging me down because you just told our listeners what a complete bouge I am. But it's a truth. It's a truth. Did you drink? No, you didn't drink. I was drinking the red wine and you
weren't.
No,
I don't drink. If I'm about to watch a movie I've never seen before, I make sure that I don't imbibe or I'm not under the influence. I try to. If it's a movie I've already seen, like when I watch The Foreigner Blows, I got hammered, let me tell you.
Now, you know what? Listen, okay, Anderson was talking about the 400 blows, which is, what we talk about on this month. We talk about the 400 blows, Anatomy of a Murder, for our bonus episode for our Patreon.
That was for last month. Oh, that reminds me, Gregor.
For last month, yes.
We got to do the thing.
Last month.
We got to do my favorite thing. All right, pause. Hold on.
Okay. The randomizer.
Burn 30 seconds.
I'm going to burn 30 seconds. Yeah, so we talked about Anatomy of a Murder, score by Duke Ellington, directed by Otto Preminger, James Stewart, Lee Remick's in it. By the way, yeah, that's our bonus episode from last month. The one thing Anderson and I forgot to really mention was the performance of Lee Remick in the film, and she was really wonderful. And I should have said that actually in the Patreon, but then we also talked about the 400 blows and how much I used to really not like Francois Truffaut, but lately I after watching the 400 blows, I'm really, for the next several months, I'm really going to get into the films of Francois Truffaut.
Poor,
and maybe when I maybe 10 years later, when Cinematics actually makes a ton of money, millions of dollars, and we sell it and the LLC or whatever, I might move to Paris and just watch French New Wave films.
So you're going to punish yourself?
Maybe, That's funny. Okay, and then maybe I'll fall in love with someone in Paris because it was Francois Truffaut who led me to the 400 blows. And you know what? The final moments in my life, I'm just going to be an old man, but I'm going to be fit. I'm going to be running to the shore. I'm going to be running on the streets all to the shore. Yes,
we had very long conversation about Anatomy of Murder as well as the 400 blows, and we really celebrated 1959, which we got in the habit of doing now that we're in the swing of things every year, every month when we pick a new year. We talk about the births, the deaths, or sometimes the deaths. What happened, like, you know, benchmark moments in that year. Some really interesting facts about 59, actually, and Academy Award winners, top box office, as well as the two movies that we chose and where you can find them. I didn't mention where you could find Anatomy of Murder. Now that I think about it, I saw it on the Turner Classic Channel, Turner Classic Movies, okay. TCM. They have it. And speaking of Lee Remick and how great she was in that movie, Lana Turner was actually originally offered the part. So that's a little put that in your pipe there and smoke that. All right.
Very cool.
Here we go. We're going to generate to figure out what movie, what year we're going to be diving into for the month of October 2020 for Cinematics. We're doing movies randomly in between 1940 and 1989. I shouldn't say movies. We're doing years. Ah, my God. This is out of control. This is something that might not be legal pretty soon, Greg. That's my roundabout way of saying calling this an abortion. Okay.
Oh, yeah, roundabout. Very good, though.
I just randomized it. Drum roll, please. 1949, already been done. We've already done that one, so regenerate. 1973 is the year. F to the yes, Gregor. I am excited about the 1973, let me tell you. Early 70s.
Was that a golden age of filmmaking? Was that golden age for you, Anderson?
I like to think that I respond to a lot of movies made. 70s, a terrible decade, except for the films that came out of Hollywood. And from around the world. It was just a great decade for movies in the 70s. Oh, the 70s. And then the 80s were awful, and the 90s were great. And I really...
80s were awful?
Oh, 80s, terrible. What? Terrible. Nothing great in the 80s.
Joe Dante directed Gremlins. Gremlins is Eric Holmes' favorite movie of all time, and I still am not his friend for not having watched it.
How could you have not watched Gremlins, Greg?
You have not.
All right, what have you seen since the last time I talked to you? So 1973 is the year that we're gonna be diving deep on for October. We'll each pick a movie that's readily available to stream somewhere that people can access, and then you listen along, and you'll get some tidbits about the 1973. I love it. All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a great movie that I've seen that isn't coming out that we're going to talk about this week or next week, but there's nothing. You know, Enola Holmes. I loved Enola Holmes. Did you see Enola Holmes?
No, I've been nudged. I've been told by listeners that I should watch this Enola Holmes. It seems needs a haircut.
Haircut. It's amazing. She's a sister. She's a younger sister of Sherlock Holmes.
And I'm tired of Sherlock.
Millie Bobby Brown. And you watch Stranger Things. You actually.
I might try and take
series.
I put it on with the boy in the room, and if he stays interested, I'll stick around. But beyond that, there's no way I'm watching this by myself.
And she does these. She does your favorite cinematic trick. She breaks the fourth wall and she talks to the camera all the time.
So
you love that.
Love
it so much. How can you not like?
I don't mind it when the narrator talks to me, but don't look at me while you're talking to me. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes, and it also stars Fiona Shaw. Fiona Shaw is this elderly actress, and she's very celebrated, and she starred in the Brian De Palma film The Black Dahlia several years ago. That's the reason why I'm mentioning that is because that's a
largely
classic film again.
Unwatchable.
No,
largely
don't unwatchable. Don't say that, Anderson. On our last Patreon episode, we almost broke our friendship because Anderson started talking about Brian De Palma.
I got heated.
You got a little bit heated, so no comment on that. It stars Henry Cavill from your favorite movie, Man
Superman.
Of Steel. He plays... He plays Sherlock Holmes in it.
I like
Holmes,
him in as the J-Man a little bit more, I think.
The J-Man? The Witcher
Passion,
Man?
Passion
the Witcher?
Of the Christ? Wasn't that him?
Oh, Passion... No, that was Jim Caviezel.
I always confuse those two. They're very similar.
Really? Yeah. And okay. Well, here's the good news. Go check out Enola Holmes as you can and get on this bandwagon, Anderson, because there's going to be five more sequels to this movie. Aren't you
excited?
Cannot
wait. On tippy toes. Can you hear that I'm off mic? I'm on my tippy toes. I'm so excited.
Okay. Right. I am not. I'm being facetious. 2 hours and 3 minutes. It came out September 24th. I highly recommend Enola Holmes. Andrew Martin, our friend over at Andrew Watches Movies, fellow podcaster, he saw that on
How's
my recommendation, and he's doing good. He from my recommendation
I
and
check
other
in
people
with him
he
just the other day. He was going through some tough times. Hope you're listening, Andrew, and hope you're doing well.
Okay, well, he tried for 20 minutes, and I felt really bad because he just really bounced out from that movie.
Yeah, so, I don't want to waste my 20 minutes. I'm just going to see the writing on the wall there. Listen, I saw three... Oh, wait, before we move on, Greg, while you're talking about movies so glowingly, and I'm really curious to see how this is going to go, I would like to ask you about a movie that I've been recommending to you for a better part of a year now. That you finally watched, and we had an exchange.
Thank you.
It's not in the spirit of what we do here, but the spirit of what we do here is talk about movies. I know for a fact that my friend Greg finally saw a movie that I thought he would just watch on a loop for the rest of his days, called The Lighthouse. I believe that this would be one of your favorite movies of all time. Turns out not the case. Why don't you let us know how you really feel about The Lighthouse, Greg?
Well, so not to plug Patreon again, but there's a listener on our Patreon, and he said he's been an under the radar listener of Cinematics for a while, and he's a Patreon member. I'm not going to mention his name because I don't know if he wants to be on the radar. Mm-hmm. So this person shall go unnamed. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much for your response. He was actually getting a little bit annoyed that it has taken me months to actually watch The Lighthouse, and he was saying, you know what, buddy, I'm thinking of actually withdrawing my patronage from you guys because it's
a crime. Wouldn't be fair to me, unnamed listener.
Yes, unnamed listener. But thank you for your support. And he was a little bit, there was a threat there, okay? And I understood the threat.
So you respond to threats, is what I'm hearing.
No. The thing is, he did not. I do respond to threats, folks. But please, if Patreon members, if you need to force me to watch movies, send your emails right now. I might have to do it just out of pure cowardice. Mm-hmm. What this guy did not know is I actually did see The Lighthouse several weeks ago, and I did email him back and I told him my reaction, and he was disappointed. But he's still going to be a Patreon member. So thank you, unnamed patron.
The Lighthouse. How is this going to go?
Okay, The Lighthouse. Okay, it has a beautiful aspect ratio of the times, like you said, Anderson Cowan, the director. What is his name again? What is it? David Gordon Green?
No.
I'm kidding. I don't know what his name is. Okay, Robert Eggers. Robert Eggers' brother. Okay, Lego my ego. Okay, so sorry. No, that patron might actually just dialogue. He might
Robert Eggers
right
and
now.
Max Eggers.
Robert Eggers. Okay, talented filmmaker. Well done craftsmanship. I just thought the actual storytelling execution was subpar. It was literally, I felt like I was going to elementary school writing. Mm. It was really grade school, grade F writing.
You could say the same thing about Tenet. You know that? You could. Take the science out of Tenet and the story and the characters and the dialogue is grade school or maybe junior high. A James Bond fan from junior high.
If you're going to make a movie about the lighthouse and about maybe there's a mermaid, there might be a haunting,
or
maybe it's the delusion, all these things, all these interesting things about that building, that world, and it's a two-hander, it has all these interesting elements, bored the living heck
That's
out
shocking.
Of me. I just thought the storytelling execution was, again, subpar. The acting by Pattinson, obviously, and Defoe, very well done, but you know what? All it was is about, you watch these guys for a couple of days, and during the day, Robert Pattinson does all the work while the other dude is sleeping and snoring and farting, and then towards the nighttime when the light is on, he has this really out-of-body experience up there when Robert Pattinson's wondering what's going on, and then there's sometimes he'll grab a seagull and he'll just throw it up against something. But you know what? I was bored. Mm. I was, just as you were about the 400 blows, You were a little bit bored by the movie. Let's face it. You didn't say that in the thing. You were a little bit bored by the 400 blows. I know you, Anderson. I was definitely bored by The Lighthouse. I was shocked at how much I did not like this movie.
I thought you would just ease right in the atmospheric lull that he was obviously going for.
I wanted to get as drunk as these two people after watching The Witch is a way better film. I'm excited to see what Eggers has done next.
He's a
voice. You remember when you said you don't like when filmmakers show off on like these wonders and tracking shots and push-ins and sometimes
if it's working for the scene, if they're doing it just for the sake of showing off and I got to sit through it, But then, there's also like stuff with Gus Van Sant does and Jerry where he has an incredibly long tracking shot of Affleck and Damon in the good Affleck in the desert, essentially walking, and it just goes on and on. And he's like testing the audience and daring you to just switch the channel, essentially, or tap out, which I appreciate. Like the pie eating scene, I appreciate that. In a ghost story, I'm gonna quote you text wise, and then we'll move on from the lighthouse because that's not what we're supposed to be doing here. So Greg just writes to me back. This is early September. Saw the lighthouse. Generous 2.5 out of 5. More like the S house, and he actually edits himself. He wrote SH*T house. He added a letter in there. And then I wrote, "You're kidding." And then Greg went on to say, "Middling and too cerebral and overworked for its own good. Looks pretty. Performances half-baked. Script. Looks good. Good performances. Half-baked script. Symbolism was pretentious. Overrated. I like The Witch more." Nah. All right. Okay, I like this side of Greg. I think that for a film critic, you're just too nice, and you interview so many of these people, and you know you have a relationship in that sense, and you can't look at them.
Are you saying I blur the lines, Anderson, with my review? Oh, come on, what are you doing?
I think you're too nice to be a critic.
Are you saying I'm cooking the ratings? I'm cooking the numbers.
You tell people what they want to hear too often. And you're a critic,
Anderson,
and you
you're
need
a great
to,
guy.
You need,
you're a great guy, Anderson.
There it is, because Greg sees the dark side of me, and he's always nothing but nice. And I know that you have dark thoughts about me. I know you do. I know it.
No, I I like you as much as I like the lighthouse. Is that good?
Have a 2.5-star friend.
See, how about that? No, but did you? I'm kidding. Have you seen anything the last couple?
Yeah,
weeks?
Yeah, I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But Cuties, I saw Cuties. I understand what I understand what the issues are, and I respect those people who have actually seen it and they have issues with it. I do not respect anyone who's taking issues with it who have just heard about it. So f you. Stop it. Watch the movie before you comment on it. But it's unfortunate. It's kind of a double-edged sword. It's unfortunate because it's a very good story. It's definitely a coming-of-age story. Way done in a much more effective way than The 400 Blows. But it's definitely sexualized. There's definitely shots that did not need to be there, like close-up crotch shots of little girls that did not need to be in the film. I don't know what the filmmaker was going for. I don't know if she was going for shock and awe and a bunch of controversy to get the word out. I don't know if that's what her, or if maybe she's a first-time feature director, so maybe she thought that she needed this to pound the point home. I don't know. Poor choice of words. I don't know what her motivation was, so that's a big question for me. That being said, I really liked the story. I liked the characters. I liked what it was saying. It was one of the best end shots of a movie I've seen this year. I'm really glad I saw it, and I don't think I would have seen it if it wasn't for the controversy. So that's why it's a double-edged sword. I don't need all of that gratuitous, frankly, gross imagery, that especially towards the end, where they're sexualizing, like, you know, 11, 12-year-old girls. But if it wasn't in there, I probably wouldn't have heard enough about it to need to see it to figure out what all the hullabaloo was about. You know what I mean? So, double-edged sword.
Okay. That is weird.
I recommend it.
I guess sometimes controversy is, the controversy in this point is good. It's good.
I wish that it got controversy in another way other than the really gross way of, you know, shooting. There's no nudity or sex scenes, which I kept waiting and being fearful of a sex scene. Like, I was very concerned that they're going to have like these young girls doing something overtly sexual with another person. Never went there, thank God. But there's no nudity. There's inferred nudity and pictures of inferred nudity. But it's just gratuitous, like bumping and grinding, and they're dancing like what's her name, and just little girls doing things that they shouldn't be doing for at least 5 or 6 years. So there's that. Also saw a documentary, quote unquote documentary, called Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets. Came out of Sundance. Liked it quite a bit. You should know that it's not 100% truthful. It's kind of a new genre almost, where they set up a scenario where it's the last night of this bar called the Roaring Twenties. That's in Vegas, just off the strip, and it's a tiny little hole-in-the-wall dive bar, and it's the last night, and all the regulars show up for the last night and the party atmosphere of the last night, but it's really not much of a send-off because they're all old lushes, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Here's the thing, that wasn't shot in Vegas, it was shot in New Orleans, and it's not a bar that's actually going out of business, so they're all acting. But what happened was there was really no script. It was kind of done almost like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where they're like, they gave them a premise. They said, this is the last night, your favorite bar, some of you actually literally live in this bar, drinks around the house, have at it, we got a film crew. And then they just shot what happened.
Then why didn't they just say that's the way it's gonna be?
I don't know. I guess it's harder to package, especially when you're trying to sell an idea or get it into Sundance.
That's a crime.
But I think Sundance accepted it knowing the truth. It's not like they swindled. I think that it's just you got to package it for an audience. Because it's too hard to get an audience to buy in. We got a bunch of drunks to come to a bar and drink for free, and this is what happened. So they wanted to give it a little bit of a story.
Come on. Okay, so you liked it, but
I did.
But it loses its luster because you realize that it's a little bit of a fakery situation.
No, it's definitely fakery.
It's not a look, it says here on IMDb, documentary, comma, drama. They should have just said drama. Documentary? Come on. So,
but it is because it's not scripted. So,
so okay. So
there's an Australian film, which I guess is very, very similar, and people have suggested that this is a ripoff of that. However, the characters are very colorful. Even the bartender is fantastic. I really did enjoy spending time with these folk in. I almost called it Laundry Day. It's not called Laundry Day. That's another bar movie with some of the same actors, also from New Orleans.
And we, you know, you and I both love Bukowski, Charles Bukowski.
Yeah, it's very definitely got Bukowski. And if you miss the bar scene, like so many of us do, me included, this was nice. It was like sitting. I really like little hole in the wall, dirty, scuzzy bars with people with broken dreams that love to tell you their life stories. I love it. I love those atmospheres. Yeah. I feel at home in there. And this felt like you know, spending a couple hours with people like that in a bar like that I've frequented many a times before the plague. So I enjoyed it. It went down smooth, as they say.
Okay. Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets, a faux documentary that's actually a drama, but it ultimately is worth watching because it's well done.
And then finally, I saw an epic, sweeping epic of a movie that really worked for me. I really enjoyed The Devil All the Time. I loved The Devil All the Time. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix right now. I highly recommend it with asterisks, okay? Because this is a very dark movie. It is very heavy. It is filled with misery. The Devil All the Time is a very apt name because the devil is in every nook and cranny of this movie. There's one or two good people in the world and everyone else is awful. That's the message of this movie. Based on a book, the narrator of the film, we get a lot of voiceover, which really worked in this movie. I know that a lot of people don't like narration. I like it when it works. And I think that you can give it a pass if it's based on a novel. I think narration really brings it to the next step. Gives you the ideas of what some of the characters are thinking, which you could read about in the novel, but you don't necessarily get from the movie unless you actually have the narrator telling you. And what was interesting with this one, Devil All the Time, is Campos, the director, hired the author of the novel to do the voiceover, and he has a voice for it, so it worked. So it's essentially like a book on tape, abbreviated book on tape with visuals, and I really, really liked it. Some great performances by Pattinson. Everyone's talking about his accent. It didn't bother me at all. He's supposed to be a preacher from Tennessee in the 60s. It didn't bother me at all. I kept waiting for him to do some like pokey garbage, like pokey Nicolas Cage thing, like Peggy Sue Got Married, but never came. He was just doing some kind of southern accent. I mean, it worked for me. So
Bruce Perky was
really like
saying, our buddy Bruce Perky was saying he really did dislike this movie because it was caricatures. Do you disagree? It's not caricatures. Were the characters well done in your estimation?
I liked all the characters. You know, like those really evil, vile characters in Stephen King novels?
Yeah.
That's what pretty much every character in this movie felt like. I really liked it.
Okay, this sounds like something I would love.
I really enjoyed it.
The Devil All the Time, now streaming on Netflix. And it's worth the running time. Fine, you're fine, right, with the running time?
I was fine with the running time. I don't know if I loved the ending. There was a couple coincidences or some dialogue that kind of bothered me, like, not to get into it, but like when Spider-Man shows up at the gas station and he hears about something that happened, it's like, I didn't need that. But... yeah, I like this. And what's funny too, Greg, is this is not my kind of movie. It's a heavy, dark drama with very little, next to no levity. But I liked it.
Yeah, this sounds like my kind of movie. Is Pattinson the one who stands out, or is it everyone? There's all these pretty much everyone has a little bit of.
Pennywise was great.
Skarsgård. Okay.
He was fantastic.
Oh, he's always good. He's always good.
What's his name? Spider-Man was fantastic. I love him. I really do love him.
Very good.
What's Spider-Man's name? I'm drawing a blank.
Sorry. Tom Holland. Tom Holland, yeah.
Tom Holland was fantastic, yes.
Yeah, okay. So The Devil All the Time. And I love Campos. I mean, I don't know if you ever watched Simon Killer. I love Simon Killer. And you and I remember Anderson. Yeah, Christine Chubbuck. Yeah, you and I were hitting the boards and saying Rebecca Hall deserves an Oscar nomination.
She was fantastic. She got nothing. She deserved everything.
That was, She was so good in that movie. Amazing, amazing performance by Christine Hall and, I mean, Rebecca Hall and Christine. Okay, so The Devil All the Time, worth watching. And even more than that, Enola Holmes, an amazing movie, right?
All right.
Not as dark.
Let's get into it. What's coming? What's coming around the corner?
October 2nd.
We're doing October 2nd and October 9th.
October 2nd and October 9th, I was, you know what, before we started, I was saying, Anderson, we can do this really quick because there's not a lot of movies the next 2 weeks. And you disagreed. You're saying there's a ton of movies.
So
really
this
great
is another
movies.
One of those weird months where we get five Fridays packed into 1 month. And about half, maybe a little bit more than half of the movies come out the first two Fridays. So we're doing the first two Fridays, and then the second half of the month, we'll do the last three Fridays, where about the same amount of movies. So that's why we split it up this way. I only pulled four that are interesting to an extent. There's only one that I'm actually excited to see, and that's based on the director's previous film, which I have not seen, but enough people have told me that I will love it that I'm interested, and I'll talk about it. So here we go.
Here we go. Okay, so here's the thing. We love Movie Insider. We've been doing this for the 5 years. We've been going to this website since for the last 5 years, okay?
Yeah.
My big recommendation for the week ending October 2nd is this movie that's not even on Movie Insider. Uh-oh. It's not on Movie Insider.
I can't find a perfect solution
what
for this.
I don't
Anyone
know.
Anyone have any suggestions that have every single movie listed? Because especially right now with all the different information and they're pulling dates and they're pushing dates.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot.
But that said, Movie Insider still is probably the best site you can go to as far as movies that are coming out. Now, I'm so glad that I actually opened this email. Because this comes out October 2nd. It's called Once Upon a River. I am so glad that we are going to talk about this very quickly. It's in virtual cinema starting October 2nd. And it's based on a novel by Bonnie Jo Campbell. And it's set in 1970s rural Michigan. And it centers on a Native American teen. Her name is Margot Crane. And Margot is played by this newcomer actress, Kennedy Della Serna, K-E-N-A-D-I. Kennedy? I don't know how to pronounce her name, but she's amazing. She's amazing. Kennedy? You know, the director, the writer-director, Harula Rose, she pronounced it Kennedy, so let's just go with Kennedy. She's amazing in this movie, and it centers on how this Native American teen, she lives in this sort of by the river. She lives by the river, small community. She lives next door to some of her, she lives with her father, and her mother just left the house. She just left. She could not stand the life there. Mm-hmm. Her mother's white.
Abandoned her
father's
daughter.
She abandoned her. Her mother's white. Her father is Native American, okay? What happens is due to an unforeseen tragedy that is instigated by Margot has to leave the confines of her small town by the river to journey up the river or down the river. I don't know. I'm bad with directions. She has to go down through the river to find her mother who has gone missing, who has left the house. She only has an address that might work, okay? But it's essentially a road movie, but it's set on the waters and set on the outdoors. There's rarely, very few indoor shots in this movie. It's sort of like a Terrence Malick film, okay?
Sounds great.
You love some of Terrence Malick stuff, Days of Heaven and Badlands. You love that stuff, but it's a really well-done movie by this writer-director, Harula Rose. She's also a musician. It's her first film, and it is... The way I'm going to get you into this movie, hopefully you might see it one day, is were you ever a fan of John Ashton, character actor John Ashton? He was in Beverly Hills Cop. You've seen him a million times before. He was in Midnight Run and Gone Baby Gone. You probably don't, somewhat of a picture is coming into your head, but when you see what he looks like, you'll say, oh, I remember this guy from the 80s. He was such a good actor back then. Well, he's a good actor right now. John Ashton plays this guy. He has emphysema.
Midnight Run.
Yes, Midnight Run. You looked him up and you remember him from the 80s. We grew up with that character actor. So John Ashton plays this elderly man. He's dying of emphysema, and he takes her in for a while to sort of be a little bit of a father figure for her as she's trying to find her mother. Really great just interplay between this teen and John Ashton's character. It's another coming of age story. We were talking about the 400 Blows earlier this ep, and this is a wonderful nuanced coming of age story. And what's cool about it is it doesn't really pull any punches. There are some really questionable things that Margot Crane, the lead the protagonist does in this movie that you're going, what the heck is she doing? And then you're thinking, well, she's a teenager. She makes mistakes. It's a really well-done drama. I hope more people get to see Once Upon a River. If you love coming-of-age dramas and are into just really good acting, it's a really well-done movie. I can't say, it's only 92 minutes. I can't believe this movie isn't getting more coverage. Also, the soundtrack to this movie is really beautiful as well. It's just a reflective, amazing coming-of-age drama that's very quiet, and I hope it finds its audience. Once Upon a River.
Once Upon a River. All right, mark it, dude.
Yes. Mark it, dude. Yes. Love this movie.
All right, I just checked. I updated, because I did the research, you know, leading up to yesterday. I've been working on the research for this, as I always do throughout the week, and one that was not, didn't have a release date yet, just sometime in October, now has a release date magically, so I'll start with that one because I got to move it up. So I have five films now, if you'll allow me to, Gregor. But The Projectionist, it's a documentary. A documentary called The Projectionist. Sounds dry and dull. Well, here's the thing. The film director converses with proprietor of Cinema Complex in Queens about the 1970s era of filmmaking and exhibition in New York City when things were edgier and sleazier than they are in today's cleaned up scene. And that filmmaker is Abel Ferrara talking to a movie theater owner, who I'm sure has many, many stories, and they're going to talk about the movies that were released there. It's going to be a trip back to the 1970s New York, Queens, to be particular, with Abel Ferrara, who just revels in that scene, talking about it. So that ought to be good. And anyone who hasn't heard Abel Ferrara talk, it's kind of what you might imagine an old Satan looking and sounding like. He seems like an old, feeble Satan.
Do you have a Abel Ferrara film that you would recommend to our listeners, Anderson Cowan?
I mean, I think that most of our listeners probably know Bad Lieutenant. What else did nice. I... Abel directed this one as well, I should say.
King of New York.
King of Chris New York. Walken, which
that would be mine.
People love that one, but it's on, pretty man. Slow. It is pretty slow. I do like the dance numbers. Addiction was good. I liked Addiction. The Addiction.
Addiction and Body Snatch. Body
Snatchers,
Snatchers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's a very interesting filmmaker, man.
Yeah, he's. Okay. I've always said this. He's like the dark Scorsese. Like if Scorsese made dark films, like they look like Abel Ferrara films. Kind of like I say that Todd Solondz is like a dark Woody Allen.
Yeah. It's like basically dark Scorsese where there's tons of heroin involved.
Yes, so. usually some drugs. That's what the Addiction is all about. Oh, Addiction is pretty good. All right, and then here's one. Everyone's been saying, you know, that Tenet is probably the biggest, most anticipated movie of the year. It is. However, there's plenty of people that have been anticipating Possessor for quite some time, and it looks like Possessor is finally getting a release October 2nd. I've been hearing about Possessor from listeners and friends for literally the last 4 or 5 months. Possessor is notable because of the director, who is a son, so it's nepotism at its best here. In fact, I want to more about that later, but Brandon Cronenberg, son of David Cronenberg, is a filmmaker, and he made one called Possessor that's been making quite a buzz on the screeners that have made their way out and about. I actually have a copy of this waiting to be viewed by me on my laptop, which I will transfer to my big screen so I can watch it appropriately, Greg. But I haven't wanted to watch it until it actually had a release date, so I can finally watch it now. This one also just showed up very recently as when it's going to be released. They're just kind of dropping movies like marbles, like just like there's really no rhyme or reason. They can't figure, I don't know what they're going off, but like it's changing day by day, so it's very frustrating. But Possessor, if you're familiar with Cronenberg's work, The Fly is his biggest one, but he also did like History of Violence and Eastern Promises and Maps of the Stars. Existenz, he's got some pretty ghastly imagery that he kind of leans on in every single one of his films, and it's, from all accounts, same is happening here with Possessor. And Possessor's got a bit of a Manchurian Candidate thing going on, but it's actually science that makes it happen rather than hypnosis. I guess hypnosis is a form of science, but it's actually a computer chip that is implanted into random and I guess innocent people's minds, and then they are used as assassins at the will of very highly paying clients. So that's the storyline, and this one is now being released as Possessor Uncut. So I got to imagine that there was some kind of back and forth with the studio and the director and like what could be in there, what can't be in there. So it looks like this is an NC-17 horror sci-fi thriller, Possessor. I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this one for a while after we see it.
Okay, well, you know, I love the Cronenberg, and I love, you know, I love nepotism. I mean, in a way, you know, I live in a house with my mom, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's just
I
wouldn't the family
call that
home.
Nepotism.
So I'm a, you know, I'm all about the nepotism, like you, who's all about hard work and.
I didn't even say who's in the
just marriage.
Jennifer Jason Leigh and Sean Bean are the two big names. Andrea Riseborough is also in this. As well,
we love Riseborough, right? Come on, Mandy, come on, and you know, Existenz, Jennifer Jason Leigh, mm-hmm, she's helping out the son there with, so that mm-hmm, that should be good. Mm-hmm. Okay, Possessor,
Uncut. And then finally, Uncut. I'm not. This isn't really an official pick, but everybody's favorite waify white kid is in a movie called Spontaneous, which I guess there's a chance that it could be fun. Did you come across Spontaneous with Charlie Plummer?
No,
our boy Charlie Plummer. It's a comedy, fantasy, romance, and it's about a high school coming of age story about growing up and blowing up. Students in the school begin exploding, like literally, like spontaneously combusting, and seniors Mara and Dylan, played by Charlie Plummer and Catherine Langford, they're seniors, and they struggle to survive in a world where each moment may be their last. So this is directed by Brian Duffield, and Brian Duffield is familiar. He's a writer of Underwater, which a lot of people liked. I thought it was pretty good, actually, as well as the Divergent series. He's part of that world, and who knows? So Spontaneous could be interesting, but probably will not be seen by me.
Whoa.
That rounds out October 2nd for me.
Yeah. You know, we all love Charlie Plummer from, what, King Jack, right?
King Jack, yeah.
King Jack. We love him from King Jack. Okay, so yeah, October 9th, the week of October 9th. There's
one last thing. October 6th, real quick. It's getting released October 6th now. I talked about it last month, but then you're like, no, it's not coming out. It's called The Ringmaster, and it's going to be on VOD, and it's all... It's all about onion rings, and an aging chef from Minnesota has his life turned upside down when a relentless filmmaker from Las Vegas tries to make the chef's onion rings world famous. And this is a documentary. It's got me interested. It's only got 11 ratings so far, 8.7. But talk to me about onion rings. Let's go. Let's see if you can. I love it when they take something mundane and make a documentary that's thrilling. I love that. So I'm hoping for The Ringmaster to do such that. So that's October 6th on VOD.
Yeah, you know what? After Uncut Gems, I kind of want to see Hubie Halloween, that Adam Sandler film.
I got it.
Netflix.
It's on my list. The director of Heavyweights. Yeah, let's see. Let's see what happens. It all depends on who Hubie is. If he's going to be a really annoying character, like the Water Boy or Little Nicky, or is he going to be a character that I won't want to punch?
But do you, even some of the bad, quote unquote, bad Sandler films, do you at least have a modicum of enjoyment with the stupid humor?
I mean, I love Billy Madison. I absolutely love Billy Madison. And nothing that he's done since, other than Uncut Gems, has really got me going. Punch Drunk Love. I love that one. But a lot of his other silly stuff that people do love, like Happy Gilmore, doesn't really do that much for me. So I've kind of tapped out. I haven't even seen... that one that
The Wedding Singer, and The Wedding Singer, he's good. And
this most recent Netflix deal that they're giving him essentially half the network, and he can make whatever he wants. I haven't seen any.
Yeah.
I started to watch the one, Stan Wexler, I guess it was, something Wexler.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't get to 20.
Sandy Wexler, I think. So anyway,
who apparently, according to my buddy, Mike Carano, who knows the guy that it's based on, Adam Sandler was doing like a Dead Nuts On performance. Like he was really emulating him, but I could not stand that character. So I just, he was trying to get into someone's house and walk into a guest house across the lawn when I just said, I can't do it anymore. I think it was about 20 minutes in.
And you gave up. You gave up on that movie. But yeah, Hubie, you know, Halloween, he's the local town nerd, and he thinks that there's something going on, and he's warning everybody, and he's sort of the adult who cried wolf, and people just really cast him aside, the kids, the adults. He gets no respect in the local town, but even though Halloween is his favorite holiday, but when he actually, so he thinks there might be a murderer on the loose in the town, and he's trying to tell people that to be safe, but they don't trust him. So it's a comedy could be a thriller. I don't know. It has some interesting stuff to it.
And you got Adam Sandler, of course, Julie Bowen, Steve Buscemi, who shows up in all of these, and Ray Liotta is also in this one. Kevin James, Rob Schneider, who's a lot of the familiar cast.
The crew.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? You never know. You never know. It could be great. Probably won't be.
The one movie I did receive a screener of this yesterday, because I know one of your favorite filmmakers, this is a joke, is Wes Anderson, Anderson Cowan. Not one of your biggest guys, Wes Anderson?
I love Fantastic Mr. Fox. Love it.
Okay, love it. Okay, so you love maybe a couple of films, right? A couple of his movies. But I saw the trailer to The Planters, and it's getting some really good reviews. It centers on this woman named Martha Plant. She's a telemarketer who is grieving because her parents recently died, and then she finds an unlikely friendship with this woman named Sadie. Okay, so this friendship story, when you look at the actual trailer for The Planters, it looks like a total Wes Anderson movie, consciously so. So I'm a Wes Anderson fan, not a huge, huge fan, but this is an indie movie, and I'd like to see if The Planters, which is getting, by the way, great reviews, like I said, is only for Wes Anderson enthusiasts, or if this movie has a character of its own. And I love indie movies, so I'm going to give The Planters a go. It comes out October 9th, and I'll come back to you guys and report it on our Cinematics YouTube channel, which I've been posting some videos on our YouTube channel, I'll probably review that on our Cinematics YouTube
channel. What's the Wes Anderson Planters connection?
Well, the Wes Anderson connection is when you look at the trailer, it looks like a complete parody of a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, I guess that's about right. Like the film, the generation that came up obsessing about Wes Anderson movies are now of filmmaking age.
Yeah, and they're
great.
They're parodying his stuff. Well, maybe
that's to look forward to.
Right. And also,
it works, but it just doesn't work in long form for me. That's my problem. I've said it 1,000 times. Like, if there were just shorts, if Wes Anderson only made shorts, they'd be like some of my favorite shorts. But it just becomes wearing after a while. That style does not have legs for me.
You know what? I'm surprised that you were not, or maybe we haven't had this conversation, but did you appreciate Bottle Rocket when it came out?
Oh, I love Bottle Rocket. Yeah, that's another problem. Okay. I had high, high hopes. I absolutely love Bottle Rocket, especially the first half.
Okay.
And I could not wait. I saw it in the theater like 2-3 times. Could not wait for his next one. And when he did the Royal Tenenbaums, which led to Arrested Development, so I have him to thank for one of my favorite TV shows of all time, even though that went south as well their last season. But Royal Tenenbaums, actually Rushmore came out first. I was not a fan of Rushmore. I just wanted to punch him in his face. I did not care about that character at all. He was annoying and not in a good way. I've since learned to love Jason Schwartzman in other roles, but not that. And then Royal Tenenbaums and nothing. And ever since, it's just, I love the Fantastic Mitch Fox, Isle of Dogs. I've seen all of them. Isle of Dogs had its moments. I liked part of it. But it's just too quirky for the sake of quirkiness for me. That's what I see.
But you're ultimately disappointed in a weird way, because even though he's celebrated as a filmmaker, you miss the guy from Bottle Rocket, right? You miss that guy, that guy who did Bottle Rocket.
Yeah, it seems like he's kind of a one-trick pony, and he does that trick really well, but it's not a trick that I appreciate.
Okay. But you understand why he has this worldwide acclaim and so many people love his stuff, right?
I do think a lot of people feel like they're above it all when they consider themselves a Wes Anderson fan. I do think that there are some people that feel like they're film aficionados are well familiar with Wes Anderson and they like to respond to his stuff. I do feel that a lot of it. I think it's hip to like Wes Anderson.
Okay, so film snobs love Wes Anderson.
I think that wannabe film snobs who consider themselves film snobs but are not film snobs like Wes Anderson. So apologies to anyone listening who love Wes Anderson. So but it's the people that boast about it, because they're aggressively affectionate of him, aggressively so.
Do you think there is a dark area of real film snobs who actually hate Wes Anderson movies?
Yes.
Because of...
Yes.
Okay. And those to you might be the actual real film snobs, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not. It's amazing what I... Every single day that goes by, the more I learn about movies, Greg, the less I realize I know. It's true. If I listen to myself, which I do, from 10 years ago, I hear a man who thinks he knows everything, a young man who thinks he knows everything about movies. I knew nothing back then. I feel like I know less now than I did back then, and I've learned so much since. So it's one of those things. But yeah, there's a lot of pseudo film snobs, pseudo cinephiles out there, and I think the pseudo cinephiles really suck up to the old Wes Anderson. They really try and use him as a beacon of film knowledge.
Okay, when we're going to close this Wes Anderson book, were you ever deeply moved by a Wes Anderson film?
Yeah.
I've been moved. Okay, good, good. I'm just, okay, good, good.
Moonrise Kingdom. Yes, that one did move me. And that was his least Wes Anderson-y movie I think he's ever made.
Okay, very cool. And, you know, I'm glad
other
you
than
loved
Bottle
Moonrise
Rocket.
Kingdom.
Bottle Rocket was his least Wes Anderson movie ever made. Who knew that at the time? Not me.
Okay, so what's your final film for October 9th? I'm assuming Trump Card. Do you have any other things? I was joking.
Final movie is a movie called The... Oh, one last note on Spontaneous, which I was not even an official pick, but Piper Perabo's in there. Greg, where's she been? Miss that Piper Perabo.
Yeah, we miss her. Coyote Ugly and that long series that I forgot what she was in, but she's a very good...
Penny Dreadful.
The Pledge. Was it The Pledge? Is that the name of the movie? The Pledge? No, what's The Prestige? The Prestige. She was good in The Prestige. Remember Piper Perabo?
Yeah, of course. Prestige.
Rebecca
Fantastic.
Hall. We just mentioned Rebecca Hall, too. So both of them were wonderful in that movie. So
and she was in a Looper, but I thought I would be seeing Piper Perabo all over the place after Coyote Ugly. What did I like her in before Coyote Ugly? There's something before Coyote, I thought.
You know, Piper Perabo is such a good actress. I would assume that she would have had a career like a Jennifer Garner, where we'd see her in so many other things, and she, you know, but...
she continues to work. I mean, she's got 48 credits, and she's been working pretty much every year. It's just in stuff that I haven't seen, like Black Butterfly. I've not seen that. And Turn Up Charlie, the TV series.
Oh, Black Butterfly. That's such a... But listeners, Black Butterfly is such a cool film. Go see that movie. Antonio Banderas and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, very twist-driven film. Very good.
I like this Black Butterfly. I need to see this immediately.
Seriously, it's about writers. And
we covered it on this movie, on the show, Greg.
Yeah. Oh, you remember. You remembered. Okay. Wait. Did you review it with me? Did you review it? Did you see it? You saw it?
I don't
know.
The poster looks like so many other goddamn posters, Greg. It's getting ridiculous.
We love Piper.
Is mimicry a word? It should be. Mimicry.
Yes, mimicry is a word.
I don't think mimicry is a word.
Yeah, mimicry is like what people...
You're too nice,
Wes Anderson and
you're too nice.
Wes Anderson people do is they do mimicry when they try to make those Wes Anderson type movie films. Hopefully The Planters is good. What is your final one?
Hopefully The Planters is good. Ninth. Anyway, The Wolf of Snow Hollow. The Wolf of Snow Hollow. I like this movie for three reasons, Greg. Yeah. One, it's a comedy horror thriller. I like that combo. All right. Here's the log line. Terror grips a small mountain town as bodies are discovered after each full moon. What's going on there, Greg? Losing sleep, raising a teenage daughter, and caring for his ailing father, Officer Marshall struggles to remind himself there's no such thing as werewolves. This sounds like it could be fun. It's directed, written, and starring a man named Jim Cummings. Also stars Ricky Lindholm. This is the second thing I like. Robert Foster is also in this. Jim Cummings made a movie called...
Robert Forster.
What did I say?
Forster. R.I.P. Oh, you said Foster.
Oh, yeah. I said Foster or Forster. Sorry. Ah.
Forster. Yeah, no problem.
Disrespectful, too, with the R.I.P., yeah.
No.
He made a movie that I've been told that I'm going to love numerous times that I just have not got around to watching. And I'm finally going to do that now. A 2018 film called Thunder Road. Have you seen Thunder Road?
No.
Oh, I hear so many good things about this Thunder Road. Making Blair's in there, who I love from the Blue Ruin, Jeremy Saulnier world.
Yeah.
So I am going to watch this Thunder Road. I think it's on Prime. It's been streaming on either Netflix or Prime forever, and it's been in my queue forever. And I got to watch this Thunder Road. So I hear good things. So that's the second reason why I love it. And the third reason why I'm very excited about this, The Wolf of Snow Hollow, it's an hour and 23 minutes. Let's all get on board and get excited about this, The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Yes,
heard it here first.
Thank you. The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
The Wolf. Snow Hollow.
And thank you. Thank you. I this was sent to me 12 days ago, and you helped me open up my email on The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
This will be on Orion Classics VOD and digital.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Or you'll send.
Oh, you will
link.
Pay for this. Okay, what if I get you a link? You maybe.
Yeah,
okay,
link,
so
yeah.
I'm okay. Okay.
Especially if it's a Vimeo link, then I can just easily access it on the old Vimeo app.
Yeah, and like in listeners, you know, here's the cool thing with Anderson. He transfers it into his big screen, so that takes a little bit of work, a little leg work. So
it does.
Props to you. Yeah, I make sure to download it straight to my Chromebook, which is about 2 inches.
Greg watches most movies on his Apple Watch these days.
Yeah, so you know. That, you know, if I could, I would. So that's my, I'm
like,
a bastardized
children are
version
scared
of
Greg in the neighborhood. They're like, why is that man obsessed with the time? And the mom says, he's watching movies, honey.
That's, you know, that's my life. I don't mind what screen I watch. I'm a horrible film fan, film snob who loves Wes Anderson movies. You know what? I'm not that. I don't love him as much as most film snobs do. But I think ultimately,
pseudo film snobs, Greg. You're an actual
film snob.
You're more, way more of a cinephile than I am. You have way more of a.
Thank you.
You're a watching. Cachet? A walking encyclopedia of film knowledge. And like, you put me to shame.
Thank you.
And you're one of the many
you,
things that happen to me on a regular basis that make me realize how little I know, which is good. It's humbling. Yeah. And it continues to feed that hunger of learning more and continuing to, you know, watch movies as they come out. And well, yeah, I do it for a living, but also like I have enthusiasm. Like I used to say that to me, and I took it as a huge compliment that like, you were surrounded by jaded critics who didn't really even like watching movies anymore, but I still love them. And I hope you still feel that way about me because it's true.
Yeah, well,
it's true.
When I said that to you and when I was insulting other critics, I was actually looking in front of a mirror. So I was looking at myself.
You work with a lot of people who don't really like movies anymore. They love them when they're younger, but they've lost the zest.
Yes, very good point. That was me 20 years ago realizing I would be talking about me right now.
My wife would love me to lose my enthusiasm for movies.
Are you serious?
And learn to love like the dreams of a 9-to-5 selling insurance, but that's yet to take hold.
Can you tell your wife to please one day sit down with you on bed, and maybe Atticus can be, maybe when he's going to school, you guys can watch the 400 Blows together, and then after that maybe watch a Wes Anderson film
catalog.
Yeah, right.
You have anything else for October 9th? April.
That's it. I think The Wolf of Snow Hollow is good to go. I can't wait till we come back for the week of October 16th, because by then I will have the Trial of the Chicago 7 review for you guys. I have a link. It's been for last week. I know we've talked about Aaron Sorkin. I can't wait for us to talk about Aaron Sorkin during that next episode for a couple weeks.
All right.
So, you like Sorkin, right? You love him?
Yeah.
Molly's
Sorkin,
game?
See, he's got the gift of gab. Through
gift
the pen.
Of gab, you know, you're also a very good writer. You have that kind of a pitter-patter, really back and forth dialogue, which is really
rhythm.
Good. So
rhythm. Yeah,
nothing's going to beat His Girl Friday, but Sorkin comes close.
It's something to aspire. Hey, you know what? The Coen brothers came close to at least paying a respectable homage in Hudsucker's Proxy.
Yeah, and by the way, I listen to listeners. If you please listen to Anderson Cowan's weekly "I've Got a Movie to Make," because it's really interesting what he has to say about his filmmaking process and screenwriting and everything. I really want to one of these days. We got to talk about the movie that you think it could make you some bucks, the commercial film, because I thought Ben's the commercial one. I'm excited to hear what you think about.
Yeah, I'm working on that every single day, Greg. And I thought that I finally had a draft that was ready to be sent out to the people to try and, you know, start doing the hard push and getting people attached. And then I got more notes. So I opened the door to anyone who wanted to read it. And I'd love to get some notes. And upwards of 30 people have given me notes. And a lot of them are really good notes, which I take to heart. So I've done a number of new drafts. And I finally thought I was ready to send it off. And then I got, from a literary scholar, I got some very good notes that I have to address at least partially. So it's a struggle. And it's really amazing that anyone makes movies or wants to make movies, especially after you learn how it really goes, because everyone is broke. I just heard this the other day on another show. It's a joke. It's like, how do you make a small fortune in Hollywood? You start out with a large fortune. That's a terrible joke, but it's kind of true. So
you know what's funny? It is, even when you think a movie's making money, you even think they're not making money,
no.
Right? What I'm saying is only a handful are actually
making
money in the film.
A very small handful, yes. Unless you can learn how to market yourself and do merch and all that stuff, which is, you know, that's almost like begging, but that's what you got to do, so... All right.
Speaking of which, listeners, Cinematic shirts are going to be coming to you guys
soon.
True.
Very, very soon. The store's not quite yet done, but I think the shirts are beautiful.
And, that was a joke to commodify.
But it's true.
Our,
it's true. Yeah. We're going to have shirts really soon. Very affordable and great quality, too. So. All right.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for listening to us. And that's all I got to say.
All right. Hanging up now, Greg. Talk to you guys in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Talk to you guys.
No, we don't do this here.